AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Grain futures are lower to start the second month of 2021, or as some would rather refer to it, the 14th month of 2020. The country is clearly still dealing with many of last year's issues, and 2021 is bringing a fresh set of challenges too. Perhaps at the top of that list is ethanol. Should the industry join forces with big oil to fight for liquid fuels' future?
Live from the pre-Groundhog Day festivities via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Then it's on to John Doggett, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association, along with Pro Farmer's own Jim Wiesmeyer. And right after the news, Kirk Hinz from BAM WX on me in 3, 2, 1. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Davis Michelson, that's awesome. You know, pre-Groundhog Day festivities, don't we have like the running of the guinea pigs today or something like that?
Running of the guinea pigs, and then there's also the gerbil, the gerbil spectacular.
Right, right.
Know? And so they'll be performing various feats of interest, you know?
Right.
Carrying walnuts from one side of the sink to the other type of stuff. Break it's out, all very exciting.
Break out all the varmints. It's time.
Bring them on. Yes. This is Rodentia's time. This is the Rodentia's hour.
I love how we're stretching a whole day.
Let's celebrate.
The groundhog gets a day to itself, right?
Sure.
Groundhog gets a day to itself. So, but we're backing up. We're bringing in like chipmunks and the guinea pigs and everything. Mm-hmm. It's a big rodent celebration.
I love a rodent rodeo of sorts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and if those shrews weren't so ill-tempered, they would participate as well. And I think they would enjoy it. I really do.
That's right. How you doing, man? Everything good
Super
over the weekend?
Fantastic. Everything's terrific, my brother. I hurt my hand very badly, although I've recovered quickly.
What?
I learned a valuable lesson. Sometimes it's better to use, what would you call it? To use leverage instead of just raw force. You know, because sometimes those, when you're messing with springs and pliers at the same time, if there's slippage, there can be mild to moderate blood loss involved. Other than that, everything is fine on this end. How about you?
Well, I'm doing just fine, injury wound free again this morning.
You made it.
Yeah, I made it through another weekend. Oh, wow. Okay, we've got a lot to cover in today's show. I'm really looking forward to it. Of course, we're going to get the update from Greg Peterson. And then the second half of the show, we're going to talk with Jim Wiesmeyer. John Doggett's going to be in for a conversation with us at the bottom of the hour. And we're going to take on some of these ethanol questions with John. Okay, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, as you know, USDA Secretary nominee Tom Vilsack will appear before a Senate confirmation hearing on Tuesday this week. That's tomorrow. In focus will be Vilsack's thoughts on Commodity Credit Corporation funds. Now, Chip, the CCC just a few years ago was relegated to primarily farm and budget policy, but after former President Donald Trump and then farm state lawmakers tapped those funds for a host of farmer payments, farm groups, biofuel groups, and now restaurant owners and climate change proposal supporters are eyeing the CCC for potential funding streams. How you like them apples?
Do you think somebody has just got such a sense of humor that they went ahead and scheduled Tom Vilsack's confirmation hearing for Groundhog Day? Does anybody else see the humor in that?
I don't know. Vilsack Maybe. Day again.
Maybe it's just me. Go ahead.
Doug Barry, a spokesman for the U.S.-China Business Council, downplayed concerns about any imminent cancellation of the current Phase 1 trade agreement which also lays out trade targets for 2021, of course. White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki said the Biden administration is approaching China issues, quote, from a position of strength, and that means coordinating and communicating with our allies and partners about how we're going to work with China. This, according to Reuters, Chip.
Yeah, that position of strength, it's we've got an agreement, and I love the fact that there are many on both sides of the aisle that are saying, listen, there was a lot of work that was put into that agreement. It doesn't matter who did the work. There was a lot of work done. Let's take a look at it and at least assess it before throwing it out, because that phase one agreement is a position of power. We can't forget that.
Yep. Well, the Biden administration late last week signaled it may soon end the U.S. block on the appointment of the next World Trade Organization leader. The U.S. and other WTO members, quote, stressed the urgency of the swift appointment of a new WTO general director general, as well as the confirmation of the date and venue of the 12th ministerial conference. That's according to Swiss Economic Affairs Minister Guy Parmalian. He was speaking in a virtual meeting, making a statement to senior trade officials from 29 WTO nations, including the U.S. This would be a bit of a reversal from the Trump administration here, Chip.
Very much a reversal. As a matter of fact, you kind of wonder just how relevant the WTO is, or it, will its relevance be enhanced under a Biden administration?
I got to get to these last two quickly. 10 Republican senators were asked to the White House this afternoon for a full exchange of views of their proposed $600 billion coronavirus relief bill. The offer is the first that Republicans have forwarded since the president proposed a $1.9 trillion plan on Jan 14. And this, the Organization for Competitive Markets is urging the Biden administration to reinstate mandatory country of origin labeling, or MCOOL, for beef. They referenced Biden's recent Made in America executive order, saying that without MCOOL, it makes it impossible to distinguish imported beef from domestic sources. Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a topic of discussion. I don't think there's any question about it bringing back cool. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. How you doing, Kirk?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Doing just fine. Better than the East Coast is, that's for sure. I know they're getting ready for a big storm out there, but
yeah, they're getting hammered again, yeah.
Yeah, they're getting hammered, but I want to go down South America and southern production areas in particular. What's the situation?
Yeah, we have had substantial, maybe not even substantial is the right word for it, I would say extremely heavy rain in the southern Brazil production areas like Parana, Santa Catarina, southern Mato Grosso do Sul, northern Rio Grande do Sul. A lot of those areas there have been hit with extreme amounts of rain. Obviously, you know, poor timing for that in terms of the harvest and everything else going on down there. So we've had extreme rain down in there. And then we are returning areas like Uruguay and the major Argentinian croplands back to a really strong La Nina-like atmosphere. And essentially what that means is we're shutting off the tap once again in those areas, kind of in a key time frame for them as well. So the weather is still highly impactful and variable down south, that's for sure.
Yeah, the question now becomes, how long do these rains last in those areas where the bean crop is ready for harvest? I mean, this is a... as you said, poor timing.
It is. Yeah, it is poor timing. Over the next week, they're overall going to continue. I think there's going to be some relief as we're going into next week and into middle part of February. But that's not to say that they don't return back again for the second half of the month. So it's going to take a long time to recoup from all those rains, over 10 inches in some areas for sure.
Wow. Wow. They going to get 2 foot of snow in New York?
I do think there will be some areas that approach 2 feet. That's the hot spot for 2-foot-inch reports, I guess, this year.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. That is going to be a challenge dealing with all that. Kirk, thank you so much, buddy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate all it. Right, Kirk, you guys have a great week.
You too. You too. Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. Machine Repeat up next. As we move toward planting, growers will need to apply what they learned from last year to start the 2021 growing season successfully. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, joins me to chat about key considerations growers should have as they focus on next year. So we know every season has its challenges. What are some of the key principles about weed management in corn that stand true no matter what Mother Nature throws our way?
growers can use three guiding principles in developing their weed management program in almost any environment. And these include using full use rates. Pre-emergent herbicides are necessary, even in seasons with later planting. You really want to make sure you can get a pre-emergent herbicide down. And then two-pass applications really help in controlling those tough weeds and also fighting herbicide resistance. It really gives you an opportunity to put overlapping residuals with different sites of action down.
Okay, so the overlapping residuals, that seems like one of the things that growers should be thinking about as they evaluate how they're going to attack weeds in 2021, right?
Yeah, the biggest overarching theme is that you need to use the information you have to inform decisions. That starts with scouting your fields all season to identify the weeds you see, maintain records of those weeds and the herbicides you've used to determine what's working and what's not. And lastly, make sure you prevent the late season weeds from going to seed by applying a full burn down, mowing or hand pulling any weeds you find. You really don't want those weeds going to seed. It's going to create problems down the road.
Exactly. Steve, what's the corn herbicide solution that you recommend for that early season weed control?
Only Acuron herbicide unlocks corn's full yield potential. It contains four active ingredients, including the unique component bicyclopyrone, and three effective sites of action. You have groups 5, 15, and 27. This helps Acuron outperform and outyield competitors by providing built-in burn down, greater consistency, powerful weed control, and longest lasting residual. And the impact of that early season weed control cannot be understated. Acuron can deliver 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergent at a full use rate.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, Steve, to find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello, everyone.
Yes. It's second half of the show. We're going to get into some of the issues that really were they were kind of blowing up on social media over the weekend, and most right at the top of the list is big oil really courting ethanol now to come along and join a fight to save liquid fuel? So it's going to be an interesting conversation with John Doggett from NCGA. Jim Wiesmeyer is going to be in on that as well. And we've got some other longer-term policy issues that I want to talk about with John and Jim regarding biofuels and the Biden administration. And I think maybe more importantly, biofuels and the Democratic Party. Okay? Does it fit with the Democrat agenda longer-term? I think that's where a lot of the questions are coming up now, because we do have, I mean, there are questions about how can we expect the Biden administration to support the RFS and biofuels and ethanol while they're also talking about electric vehicles? Well, right. It could just be a matter of timing. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, know, and doing we'll, things we'll in the correct order, that just sort of occurred to me, you know. There's a progression when it comes to technology.
That's right. Okay, let's have a conversation right now with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing very well, guys.
Good.
In a report, I saw no electrical vehicles sold at auction last week. So
zero.
None.
Zero.
Okay.
Zero. Okay.
So far.
I'll just throw that in there. Yeah, last
you know, week. You know, when we do start seeing the EV show up, and we're talking about it on Monday mornings, I got a feeling, you know, the hours and the use on those batteries are going to be a hot topic. That's what's going to determine
sure.
The value, dude.
Things always evolving as we go here. So it's
that's right.
I'm happy I can stand on the sideline and report.
Love it. Well, a week from tomorrow, you're not standing on the sideline. You're right.
No.
The, You're right under the big top, man, with the Farm Journal Field Days Equipment Edition coming up. How's that coming along?
Yeah, it's really going to be fun. A week from tomorrow, like you said, Chip, Tuesday, February 9th, of course, with our friends at Louisville, not having the show this year.
Yeah.
Come out to Farm Journal Field Days. I mean, we'll be talking machinery round the clock. So Tuesday, 8 in the morning, I'll be kicking off with our friend Ty Morgan, kind of talking about top-of-mind trends, things to have on your mind machinery-wise, trends for 2021. And then at noon, this should be really fun. I don't know. I think maybe once I've ever done a live internet, just, hey, come and ask me questions. Let's yak a machinery. But at noon, next Tuesday, in the networking lounge at Farm Journal Field Days, come on out, folks. I'll be there as long as you want to hang out and ask questions and talk, things, whatever. I'll be hanging out. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Excellent. Man, talking live with machinery, Pete, that's got to cost a bundle, right?
Costs $0 and 0 cents. Must be what it's worth, I guess. But
did he say $0? Did he say $0?
$0. I think that makes it free.
$0.
Wow. Because I'm even charging $10 a head for the gerbil races. I mean, for Pete's sake.
I don't know. I keep reading about some of these services popping up, charging to connect and stuff. And I don't know. I'm looking at it like it's an auction. We're just going to go hang out and we're going to talk.
Excellent.
That's what I've loved about auctions over the years, just visiting with people. And we're just doing it online at Farm Journal Field Days. It should be
perfect. 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 Just go to farmjournalfielddays.com and you can figure out how to register from there. Okay, let's get to it, Pete. Pick of the week.
We keep going back to the same theme, but we have to because it's just so prevalent out there. On Saturday, folks, down in Southeast North Carolina, there was a very nice farm auction by RDD Auction, and some John Deere tractors on the sale really sold well. If you saw my Facebook and Twitter post on Saturday evening, they had a 2010 John Deere 8345R. 4,000 hours, very nice condition, sold for $154,000. Now, the thing here, again, these 10 model R series, just red hot. Now, dealers just, I mean, if they could snap their fingers and give themselves more, they'd sell them in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And to show you how hot they are, now, the last 12 2010 model 8345Rs I've seen sold at auction, the average price is $132,800. Current average dealer ad price on the lot on a 2010 model 8345R, $133,700. So they're selling for more at auction than they are on the lot. Dealers can't keep up with the demand, and they don't have enough. So again, and that was in Southeast North Carolina, which is not Northeast Iowa. So that same sale, Chip, very nice. Other tractors, they had a John Deere 8330, same kind of deal here. I mean, Deere made this 06 to 09, so it's 10 plus years old. Beautiful condition, $3,900. That one for $115, very strong. They had a John Deere 7610 two-wheel drive with over 7,300 hours on it, but still one for $38,500. And a combine, they had a 2017 John Deere S670, 1,331 engine hours for $220. And again, that came out of Southern North Carolina, so it was really strong.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, sometimes you will focus on a model number, but it's not all that often that you focus on a year. I'm assuming the reason that you're focused on 2010 models is, well, you tell us.
Well, and pre-deaf, pre-tier 4. I mean, obviously, it's not just the R-Series Deere. I mean, you get Magnums, New Holland, Challenger, Massey. If they're 10 years old, nice condition, low hours, I mean, folks, if you're sitting on one of those tractors, you have what people want. And the thing going forward now, as I've been talking about, and I'll talk about this much more on Farm Journal Field Days, is that 2021, this equipment market is rapidly becoming about availability. And there just won't be as much new product as to meet the demand in current situation. So that I've only seen it, I was 10, 12 years old in the early 70s. But I heard stories about, you know, hey, I want a 4430 tractor. Go down to your dealer and they give you a lotto number. You know, get in line. Everybody else wants one.
Yep.
This doesn't happen often. It happened late 07, early 08, and it's happening now in 2021. So for the good condition used stuff, particularly pre-tier 4, pre-dep, I mean, it's just
it's there.
Out of the door.
No question. Okay, let's stay down in the south, but take us a little bit to the west over to Mississippi.
Yeah, if you get feeling bad, you got to pay so much for a used tractor or combine. Let me make you feel better, folks. Friday in Mississippi, it was a 2015 John Deere CP690, one of these big cotton baler picker rigs, just under 1,400 engine hours, six row. It went for $515,000. That's 6 years old. So down south, these machines have just revolutionized things. And you know, down there, again, when a really nice used one shows up with lower hours on it, it's, I mean, even at that price point, it's incredible, the demand.
Well, you talk about lotto numbers. I mean, they were having to, you know,
they were
pull a number to get a new machine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I shared the story a couple of years ago. We were with a dealer in Texas who told us there was so much demand for these traded-in machines that they actually had a ping pong ball lottery and a steak dinner. So you came up, you got your steak dinner, and if your ping pong ball was chosen, hey, cool, awesome, you get to write a check for $600K, bud. Congratulations.
Right.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the steak. Yeah.
Exactly.
we're getting short on time. Let's talk about four-wheel drive tractors here for a moment. What's the market?
Yeah, red hot. Last Wednesday in South Dakota, Chip, my friends at Weeman Land and Auction, they sold a 2012 John Deere 9460R, 1,057 hours on it. Triple second owner brought $230,250, highest auction price in over 5 years. Just incredible demand for it. And the day before, last Tuesday, near Madison, Wisconsin, online farm auction by George Auction Service, a 2013 John Deere 9510R, 1,958 hours, brought $210,000, highest in over 4 years. And a 2011 9230 Deere, 2,941 hours, went for $142,000, highest in over 2 years. So, again, this is everywhere. If it's nice with some age, that, I mean, like I say, it's Katie bar the door.
Yep. And it's not just tractors. It's not just combines.
Nope.
It's not just cotton pickers. It's rock pickers, too.
Yeah, Michigan. Record price on a Haybuster 106 last Tuesday in Michigan, $17,050. It's in good shape. People want it.
Exactly. www.farmjournalfielddays.com. Get registered for the equipment edition of the Field Days next Tuesday with Greg. Hey, everybody. Chip Flora here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online. And I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now, ProFarmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. Jeff, boy, it's a tough start to February here in the grain markets.
Well, we had a pretty good January, right? I mean, even last week, corn was up 47 cents, beans were up 56 cents, meal was up 8.10, even the wheat participated up 28 cents. So, I mean, it's a normal situation, begins the month. We had a lot of new long positions over the course of the last week, so taking a little profits out. You know, the strong dollar, I think, is a big story going on for weakness in the wheat market, less so for corn and beans. And I think the weather in South America is generally leaning more favorable or at least less threatening, with some crop estimates starting to rise for both Brazil and Argentina soybeans.
Yeah. And just the anticipation that we're going to start to see those crops coming, the bean supply coming in. You know, it's February now. By the end of the month, we should be looking at a flow of beans into export locations. Okay, what's going on over in the livestock markets?
Very mixed trade. We're waiting to see whether or not the beef markets can carry the trade higher. We definitely have to see the cash markets respond to the strength of the meat or the beef and the pork because we got the futures at a big premium. I think the markets continue to go sideways looking for the cash to lead to the upside as we begin the month of February.
All right. This is the month. This is the month that we're setting the spring price for crop revenue coverage policies, man. This is an important month for us.
Right. So even though the old crop beans are down 15, 16, 17 cents and old crop corn's down 6, 7, the new crop's holding in pretty well. I would anticipate exactly. We'll see those hold pretty steady.
Thank you, Jeff. Strong. That's Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis, let's bring in the AgriTalk ace in the hole. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, joining us. Jim, thanks for making time for us this morning, buddy.
Sure, Chip, anytime.
All right, John Doggett is the CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. He joins us right now. John, welcome back, man. I'm glad you could make it.
Hey, I'm glad to be with you. I'm looking out my window here in Northern Virginia. We've got snow, and then we got a bunch of ice and rain spit, and it's slick.
Yeah, Jim, you getting it too?
Yeah, we got a little over 4 inches getting the ice now, and I've got to catch a plane tomorrow, believe it or not. So we'll see.
My goodness. Good luck with that, man.
Yes.
We'll see. John, what is happening? Is ethanol really, truly being courted by the oil industry to kind of join forces to battle for the future of liquid fuel?
Well, that's a good question. And let's step back a little bit. Let's look back 20 years ago. We're gonna watch the Super Bowl on Sunday. What ads were running 20 years ago on the Super Bowl from the car companies? It was all about what was the tagline? Go green, go yellow. And you had that yellow cap, and they were going to go all in for flex fuel vehicles. Yep. And that's all they talked about for several years. And then after a while, they started talking about high compression engines, which is just fine because ethanol's got a place to play in there. Now they're talking about electric vehicles. There are so many problems with putting a lot of electric vehicles on the ground, not only just how you're going to go ahead and charge them, but who's going to fix them? We don't have people lined up to fix them. We've got a whole bunch of mechanics all around the country that know how to fix internal combustion engines. You're going to have to – there's a lot that has to go into this. So we're not going to see electric vehicles dominating the market anytime soon. Do we need to be concerned? Absolutely, we need to be concerned, but we don't need to be hysterical. I really think that in knowing some of the conversations we've had with the oil guys, they're only too willing to go ahead and work with us, but they'd like to undo the renewable fuel standard as one of the preconditions. We're not going there.
Okay. Interesting. Is there a meeting this week, a quote-unquote meeting between big oil and ethanol?
No, not to my knowledge. Okay. And there's been one reporter that has talked about that. He called me a couple times. And he said, I've got sources to tell me that this meeting's happening. And, of course, he didn't tell me the sources. I'm unaware of it. I have checked with every single member of the NCGA staff who could possibly be involved in that meeting, and absolutely none of them are going to have any idea of what kind of meeting this reporter's talking about. So we willing to talk to the oil companies? Absolutely. But if the precondition is getting rid of that statute that took the plywood off the storefronts in rural America, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. Yep. Jim,
let's not get forced into doing something we ought not to do because we're absolutely hysterical about vehicles that are not yet on the road.
Right.
I, I walk a lot in this neighborhood. It's mostly military in our neighborhood. When I walk around in the 20 or 30 or 40 blocks I take walks on, I don't see electric vehicles. I see pickups and I see SUVs.
And
we're not, let's not let our fears control our duty.
Okay. Jim?
Yeah.
I know that you're looking for EVs to take a bite out of the combustion, you know, the liquid fuel market here within 10 years, right?
At least 10 years. I had an interesting thing on the weekend. I'll keep it very brief, Chip. I'm in the market for a new car. I wanted a Tesla, but the more I talked to a couple of neighbors who got them, and the more I looked at the cars, both the hybrids and, you know, conventional, I eventually came back to really wanting a hybrid, but it's not available. And it looks like I'm going to get another Hyundai SUV, combustible engine car. Reason? Some of the things John just said. I don't think the infrastructure is there yet on the fixing side. Both of my neighbors told me they've been down for a couple of days at certain times because they couldn't get their car fixed. I hate that.
Yeah. I can't imagine if you can't get your car fixed that you would be all that fun to deal with.
No, because Hyundai's never go broke, you know, so I'm used to that now. So it could be 10 to 15 years, but the infrastructure is starting. But, you know, we're going to have to walk and not run on this one. I think John was spot on.
Okay, John, talk about the Biden administration's support for the RFS, support for biofuels, yet at the same time he talks about getting, ramping up the infrastructure for the electric vehicles in the future. I mean, is it a message that's clashing in farm country?
Sure it is. And it is difficult to figure out what all this noise means. But as we've seen, the Biden administration came in with a mandate from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, not unlike what President Trump ran into when he was elected and very much, you know, catered to the base. That's what Joe Biden is doing in part on this. Things like this, but moving towards electric vehicles is way, way, way down on the list of what the Biden administration is going to be dealing with. And he can make noise about it, and he can sign executive orders till the cows come home. That isn't going to move it. What you need is you need legislation. But what I think we're really fighting right now is we're fighting what the consumer thinks that they want. 20 years ago, they thought they wanted FFEs. 10 years ago, they thought they wanted high compression engines. Today, they think they want electric cars. And Chip, I want you to tell me what they're going to be wanting in 10 years from now.
I've got an idea. I mean, I know what I'm going to be wanting. And it looks pretty similar to what I've got right now.
That or hydrogen fuel. That or hydrogen fuel.
It's not going to be electric, I'll tell you that.
No, that or hydrogen fuel. John, here's a stat. Over the weekend, I heard Daniel Yergin, who's probably the premier expert on energy. He's got a new book out called The New Map. He said the last time the U.S. was not as energy independent as we are now was 2008. We spent $400 billion on imports. And now we don't spend very much at all. That's called economic stimulus, if you look at it the right way. Now it looks like we're taking some actions that would increase the need to import more oil.
Well, what we would say is maybe not having to import more oil, but use more ethanol. We have plenty of capacity. We have plenty of corn. You know, we could ramp up ethanol production pretty quickly in this country if given the right economic signals, but you're going to have them.
Right. You got to have the right signals, which is why I wonder, can ethanol, if the Democrat Party's real long-term objective is to get away from the combustion engine, and to the electric vehicles, if can we look for investment in ethanol when it may become a transitional fuel, John?
Well, I think it will be a transitional fuel to some extent, but the other thing is that what else can we transition ethanol to? What else can we make out of ethanol?
Yeah.
You know, plastic bags, replacing plastic. There's a lot of things we can make out
sure.
of ethanol. The other thing is that while we may turn over to electric vehicles over 20 years, there's a whole lot of the world right now that is starting to have individually owned cars, and they're all
yeah.
internal combustion
yeah.
engines. We have a huge, huge market in the world marketplace, and we're starting to tap into that. I think the sky's the limit as far as what we can do over the next 20, 30, 40 years with exports.
Okay. Excellent. What else are you working on this week, John?
Oh, gosh, we're going to be attending virtually the U.S. Grains Council annual meeting. I'm looking forward to hearing what those folks have to say about exports of corn and ethanol and where we're going to be this next year. Gosh, you know, you take a look at where we were a year ago and where we're at now.
No,
I'm pretty optimistic about exports.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. I mean, China in last week buys about 230 million bushels of corn, of U.S. corn, 5.85 million metric tons. And on Friday's show, I said, watch out, because next week we should see the traditional buyers come in. Once they start to figure out, hey, if we don't make our move, China's going to get everything that we need. And then today we get Japan as a buyer and Mexico as a buyer. It was fantastic. We've got a nice string of export demand coming into the market. John, it's always fun to talk with you. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
And
that's
Jim,
John Doggett.
Don't buy the Tesla.
Don't buy the Tesla.
I'm buying another Santa Fe. I love it.
Yeah, he loves that machine.
Send me the picture.
Oh, I will.
I love it, love it, love it. All right, that's John
right,
Doggett.
Guys.
He's the CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, is going to stick around. Jim, at the start of the show, I said, it's kind of funny that on Groundhog Day, we're going to have Secretary Vilsack's hearing for USDA Secretary. Here we are all over again.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM. Well, this show is all aces, isn't it?
It is. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That was Davis.
Yes.
Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, is sticking with us here. And, Jim, I've had the assumption that when Tom Vilsack steps in as USDA Secretary again, that he will pick up where he left off. But now you're telling me that may not be the case. He may
have
had some unfinished business that he wants to attend to.
Yes, I think your Groundhog Day analogy may be spot on. I think he's going to go back to try to focus, as he did his first year of the 8 years under the Obama administration, on the 80% of farmers who produce 20% of the crop, where he shifted in his first term at USDA to the 20% of farmers who produce 80% of the crop.
Right. I mean, when he was focused on the 20, the 80 that produced 20, he caught a lot of criticism from many sources. And you and I were two of those sources where he was catching the criticism. What does he hope to accomplish by doing that?
Well, the party has definitely moved left. And, you know, he mentioned in that interview with Storm Lake News, eight areas of that significant work needs to be done, or even historic work, he said, Chip. And yeah. Bottom line, lightning round, COVID relief. Well, that's number one for Biden, too. But sure. if the Democrats include the minimum wage increase of $15, you can kiss bipartisanship goodbye. Then he said, number two, equity and inclusion. That's not equality. That's equity and inclusion. That smacks of that 80-20, Chip, there. Mm-hmm. What data will they mine in order to help the current disadvantage? Three, climate and regenerative agriculture. He wants to triple the funding for the Conservation Stewardship Program, rural economic development. You've talked about that, broadband. Yeah. Nutrition security and assistance. What does that mean? Open and competitive markets. Does that mean return to MCOL? USDA employee morale. I hope he adds, efficiency of USDA employees and competence. Right. And eight, forest service management in an era of climate-driven wildfires. They learned from Trump on this one that the Forest Service management had a lot to do relative to lessening the impact of the climate-driven wildfires. That's my lightning round for you.
That's an impressive list of things that are on the priority, and I don't know how well a lot of that lines up with the 20 that produce 80.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. And then later on in the interview, now I'm going to be speaking to the Missouri pork producers on Wednesday. And I'm going to tell them in that interview, he said he's calling for a recreation of the antitrust force in agriculture and food processing. He's going to pursue litigation with the Justice Department. He said if meat packers don't treat their workers right, they can falter or fail under challenges like COVID. And then he said he thinks USDA can use markets to diversify food productions with smaller processors catering to more diverse farm operations.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting. I want to move on to another topic, and this one I think is important. I believe it's Senators Thune and Baldwin have introduced legislation to exclude CFAP revenues from the triple P applications under the next round of COVID stimulus. Is that right?
That is correct. And it tells me at least that Thune is not a conservative. He's a populist. And why agriculture should be singled out, I think that this raises some concerns, at least in town here, Chip, not in the countryside, that agriculture is asked to being carved out in a lot of different areas. Immigration policy, now this COVID aid, etc., vaccine, things like that. But that's the initial feedback I'm getting in town that, wait a minute, agriculture keeps asking, gimme, gimme, gimme.
Yeah. What is the status of the COVID stimulus package?
Biden, President Biden's going to meet this afternoon with 10 Republicans, moderate Republicans. I hope it goes well, but I think it's mainly show because his far left is saying they're not going to get what they want from the Republicans and they're going to go the budget reconciliation route. And we're talking really March, Chip, before we see the next COVID aid package. But we'll see. The Republicans offered $618 billion in COVID aid, but it did not include the minimum wage increase and some of the $350 billion for state and local aid.
Okay. All right. Jim, you're a policy guy, but I know you watch the markets like they're a game show sometimes. Give me your take on, one of your first items in your update this morning was Hi-Ho Silver. You're updating us on what's going on in silver. Is there a short squeeze?
It looks like there is. Milo Hamilton used to work with us at Commodities Magazine years ago, and he wrote the definitive article on the Hunt brothers when they tried to corner the silver market. And I thought of Milo. We're seeing a really dynamic development in markets, Chip. it's just unfolding between our eyes, before our eyes here.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it's going to end, but it's got all the regulatory morass. You've got Elon Musk interviewing Robinhood CEO. I mean, this thing is the number one, two, and three issue in the marketplace, from what I gather.
Yeah. And it has the potential to influence ag commodities across the board.
Oh, that, well, right now they're going after. I mean, can you imagine if they center on, let's get after, if they think somebody's trying to short the corn market, if you will, or the bean market, they can have at it. So there are major fundamental changes going on here. Potential, Jeff.
Absolutely. Jim, thanks for joining us. Getting the new week, new month started. Thank you, buddy. That is Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. Thank you so much for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Brian Basting from Advanced Trading is going to be my guest. We'll go through some of the S&Ds. And tomorrow morning, get this, North Dakota Governor Doug Burnham, along with GHG guru Dr. Frank Mitlerner. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.